was nearly wrenched from its socket. Mal had hold of me just below my elbow. He was on his stomach, hanging over the cliff face, the Firebird circling above him in the fading light.
"I've got you,"
he shouted, but his grip was slipping up the damp skin of my forearm. My feet dangled over nothing, my heart pounding in my chest. "Mal," I said desperately. He leaned out farther. We were both going over.
"I've got you," he repeated,
his blue eyes blazing. His fingertips closed around my wrist. The jolt slammed through us at the same time, the same crackling shock we'd felt that night in the woods near the banya. He flinched. This time we had no choice but to hold tight. Our eyes met, and power surged between us, bright and inevitable. I had the sense of a door swinging open, and all I wanted was to step through. This taste of perfect, gleaming elation was nothing compared to what lay on the other side. I forgot where I was, forgot everything but the need to cross that threshold to claim that power. And with that hunger came horrible understanding. "No," I thought desperately. "Not this." But it was too late. I knew. Mal gritted his teeth. I felt his grip go even tighter. My bones rubbed together. The burn of power was almost unendurable, a dull whine that filled my head. My heart beat so hard I thought I might not survive it. I needed to walk through that door. Then, miraculously, he was pulling me higher, inch by inch. I pawed at the rock with my other hand, searching for the top of the cliff, and finally made contact. Mal took hold of both my arms, and I wriggled onto the safety of the plateau. As soon as his hand released my wrist, the shuddering rush of power relented. We dragged ourselves away from the edge, muscles trembling, panting for breath. That echoing call sounded again. The Firebird hurtled toward us. We shoved up to our knees. Mal had no time to draw his bow. He threw himself in front of me, arms spread wide, as the Firebird shrieked and dove, its talons extended directly toward him. The impact never came. The Firebird drew up short, its claws bare inches from Mal's chest. Its wings beat once, twice, driving us back. Time seemed to slow. I could see us both reflected in its great golden eyes. Its beak was razor sharp, and its feathers seemed to blaze with a light of their own. Even through my fear, I felt awe. The Firebird was Ravka. It was right that we should kneel. It gave another piercing cry, then whirled and flapped its wings, soaring into the gathering dusk. We sank to the ground, breathing hard.
"Why did it stop?"
I gasped. A long moment passed. Then Mal said,
"We're not hunting it anymore."
He knew, just as I did.
He knew. "We need to get out of here," he said. "It still might come back."
Dimly, I was aware of the others running toward us over the slippery rock as we got to our feet. They must have heard my screams.
"That was it!"
shouted Zoya, pointing at the disappearing shape of the Firebird. She lifted her hands to try to bring it back in a downdraft.
"Zoya, stop," said Mal. "Let it go."
"Why? What happened? Why didn't you kill it?"
"It's not the amplifier."
"How can you know that?"
Neither of us answered.
"What is going on?" she shouted.
"It's Mal," I said finally.
"What's Mal?"
asked Harshaw.
"Mal is the third amplifier."
The words came out in a rasp, but solid, so much more even and strong than I ever would have anticipated.
"What are you talking about?"
Zoya's fists were clenched, and there were hectic spots of color on her cheeks.
"We should find cover," said Tolia.
We limped across the plateau and followed the others a short distance up the next hill to the camp they'd made near a tall poplar. Mal dropped his rifle and unslung his bow.
"I'm going to go catch dinner,"
he said, and melted into the woods before I could think to form a protest. I slumped down on the ground. Harshaw started the fire, and I sat before it, staring at the flames, barely feeling their warmth. Tolia handed me a flask, then dropped into a crouch, and after waiting for a nod from me, slammed my shoulder back into its socket. The pain wasn't enough to stop the images pouring through my head, the connections my mind wouldn't stop making. A girl in a field, standing over her slain sister, the black wisps of the cut rising from her body, a father kneeling beside her. He was a great healer. Bagra had gotten it wrong. It had taken more than the small science to save Morozova's other daughter. It had taken Merzost, resurrection. I'd been wrong, too. Bagra's sister hadn't been Grisha. She'd been Otkazatsia after all.
"You must have known," said Zoya, sitting down on the other side of the fire. Her gaze was accusatory.
Had I? The jolt that night by the banya. I'd assumed it was something in me, and yet when I looked back, the pattern seemed clear. The first time I'd used my power had been when Mal lay dying in my arms. We'd searched for the stag for weeks, but we'd found it after our first kiss. When the sea whip had revealed itself, I'd been standing in the circle of his arms, close to him for the first time since we'd been forced aboard the Darkling ship. The amplifiers wanted to be brought together. And hadn't our lives been bound from the first? By war, by abandonment, maybe by something more. It couldn't be chance that we'd been born into neighboring villages, that we'd survived the war that had taken both of our families, that we'd both ended up at Keremsin. Was this the truth behind Mal's gift for tracking? That he was somehow tied to everything, to the making at the heart of the world? Not a Grisha and no ordinary amplifier, but something else entirely. I am become a blade. A weapon to be used. How right he'd been. I covered my face with my hands. I wanted to blot out this knowledge, carve it from my skull. Because I hungered for the power that lay beyond that golden door, desired it with a kind of pure and aching fever that made me want to tear at my skin. The price for that power would be Mal's life. What had Bagra said? You may not be able to survive the sacrifice that Merzost requires. Mal returned a little while later. He'd brought back two fat rabbits. I heard the sounds of him and Tolia working as they cleaned and spit at the animals, and soon I smelled cooking meat. I had no appetite. We sat there listening to the branches pop and hiss in the heat of the flame until finally Harshaw spoke.
"If someone doesn't talk soon, I'm going to set fire to the woods."
So I took a sip from Zoya's flask, and I talked. The words came more easily than I expected. I told them Bagra's story, the horrible tale of a man obsessed, of the daughter he neglected, of the other daughter who had nearly died because of it. No, I corrected myself. She did die that day. Bagra killed her, and Morozova brought her back.
"No one can..."
"He could. It wasn't healing, it was resurrection, the same process he used to create the other amplifiers. It's all in his journals. The means of keeping oxygen in the blood, the method for preventing decay. The power of the healer and the fabricator pushed to their limits and well beyond, taken to a place they were never meant to go.
Merzost, Tolia whispered. Power over life and death.
I nodded. Magic. Abomination. The power of creation. That was why the journals were incomplete. In the end, there had been no reason for Morozova to hunt for a creature to make into the third amplifier. The cycle had already been completed. He'd endowed his daughter with the power he'd meant for the Firebird. The circle had closed. Morozova had achieved his grand design, but not the way he had expected. To dabble in Merzost, well, the results are never quite what one would hope. When the Darkling had tampered with the Making at the heart of the world, the punishment for his arrogance was the Fold, a place where his power was meaningless. Morozova had created 3 amplifiers that could never be brought together, without his daughter forfeiting her life, without his descendants paying in flesh and blood.
"But the Stag and the Sea Whip, they were ancient," said Zoya.
"Morozova chose them deliberately. They were sacred creatures, rare, fierce. His child was just an ordinary Otkazatsia girl."
Was that why the Darkling and Bagra had discounted her so readily? They'd assumed she'd died that day. But the resurrection must have made her stronger. Her fragile, mortal life, a life bound by the rules of this world, had been replaced by something else. But in the moment when Morozova gave his daughter a second life, a life that didn't rightly belong to her, would he have cared if it was an abomination that made it possible?
"She survived the plunge into the river," I said, "and Morozova brought her south to the settlements, to live and die in the shadow of the arch that would someday give Dvostolba its name."
I looked at Mal. She must have passed her power on to her descendants, built into their bones. A bitter laugh escaped me.
"I thought it was me," I said. "I was so desperate to believe there was some great purpose to all this, that I didn't just happen. I thought I was the other branch of Morozova's line, but it was you, Mal. It was always you."
Mal watched me through the flames. He hadn't said a word through the whole conversation, through all of a dinner that only Tolya and Onkat had managed to eat. He said nothing now. Instead, he rose and walked to me. He held out his hand. I hesitated the briefest moment, almost afraid to touch him, then placed my palm in his and let him pull me to my feet. Silently, he led me to one of the tents. Behind me, I heard Zoya grumble.
"Oh, saints, now I have to listen to Tolya snore all night."
"You snore too," said Harshaw, "and it isn't ladylike."
"I do not."
Their voices faded as we bent to enter the dim confines of the tent. Firelight filtered through the canvas walls and sent shadows swaying. Without a word, we lay down in the furs. Mal curled around me, his chest pressed to my back, his arms a tight circle, his breath soft against the crook of my neck. It was the way we'd slept with the insects buzzing around us by the shores of Trivka's pond, in the belly of a ship bound for Novia Zem, on a narrow cot in the run-down boarding house in Kofton. His hand slid down my forearm. Gently, he clasped the bare skin of my wrist, letting his fingers touch, testing. When they met, that jolting force moved through both of us, even that brief taste of power nearly unbearable in its force. My throat constricted, with misery, with confusion, and with shameful, undeniable longing. To want this from him was too much, too cruel. It's not fair. Stupid words, childish, senseless.
"We'll find another way," I whispered. Mal's fingers separated, but he kept my wrist in a loose hold as he drew me closer. I felt as I always had in his arms, complete, like I was home. But now I had to question even that. Was what I felt real, or some product of a destiny Morozova had set into motion hundreds of years ago? Mal brushed the hair from my neck. He pressed a single brief kiss to the skin above the collar.
"No, Alina," he said softly. "We won't." The return journey to Dvostolba seemed shorter. We kept to the high country, to the narrow spines of the hills, as distance and days faded beneath our feet. We moved more quickly because the terrain was familiar and Mal wasn't seeking signs of the Firebird, but I also just felt as if time were contracting. I dreaded the reality that awaited us back in the valley, the decisions we would have to make, the explanations I would have to give. We traveled in near silence, Harshaw humming occasionally or murmuring to Onkat, the rest of us locked in our own thoughts.
After that first night, Mal kept his distance. I hadn't approached him. I wasn't even sure what I wanted to say. His mood had changed. That calm was still there, but now I had the eerie sense that he was drinking in the world, memorizing it. He would turn his face up to the sun and let his eyes close, or break a stalk of burr marigold and press it to his nose. He hunted for us every night, and we had enough cover for a fire. He pointed out lark's nests and wild geranium and caught a field mouse for Ancot, who seemed too spoiled to do any hunting of her own.
"For a doomed man," said Zoya, "you're remarkably chipper."
"He isn't doomed," I snapped. Mal knocked an arrow, drew back and released. It twanged into what looked like a cloudless and empty sky, but a second later we heard a distant caw and a shape plummeting to the earth nearly a mile ahead of us. He shouldered his bow.
"We all die," he said as he jogged off to retrieve his kill. "Not everyone dies for a reason."
"Are we philosophizing?" asked Harshaw. "Or were those song lyrics?"
As Harshaw started humming, I ran to catch up with Mal.
"Don't say that," I said as I came level with him. "Don't talk that way."
"All right."
"And don't think that way, either."
He actually grinned.
"Mal, please," I said desperately, not even sure what I was asking for.
I grabbed his hand. He turned to me, and I didn't stop to think. I went up on my toes and kissed him. It took him the barest second to react, then he dropped his bow and kissed me back, arms winding tight around me, the hard planes of his body pressed against mine.
"Alina,"
he began. I grabbed the lapels of his coat, tears filling my eyes.
"Don't tell me this is all happening for a reason," I said fiercely, "or that it's going to be okay. Don't tell me you're ready to die."
We stood in the tall grass, wind singing through the reeds. He met my gaze, his blue eyes steady.
"It's not going to be okay."
He brushed the hair back from my cheeks and cupped my face in his rough hands.
"None of this is happening for a reason."
He skimmed his lips over mine.
"And saints help me, Alina. I want to live forever."
He kissed me again, and this time he didn't stop. Not until my cheeks were flushed and my heart was racing. Not until I could barely remember my own name, let alone anyone else's. Not until we heard Harshaw singing and Tolya grumbling and Zoya cheerfully promising to murder us all. That night I slept in Mal's arms, wrapped in furs beneath the stars. We whispered in the dark, stealing kisses, conscious of the others lying only a few feet away. Some part of me wished that a shoe raiding party would come and put a bullet through both of our hearts, leave us there forever, two bodies that would turn to dust and be forgotten. I thought about just leaving, abandoning the others, abandoning Ravka as we'd once intended, striking out through the mountains and making our way to the coast. I thought of all of these things. But I rose the next morning, and the morning after that. I ate dry biscuits, drank bitter tea. Too soon the mountains faded, and we began our final descent into Dvostolba. We'd arrived back sooner than expected, in time to retrieve the bittern and still meet any forces the apparat might send to Karjeva. When I saw the two stone spindles of the ruins, I wanted to level them, let the cut do what time and weather had failed to do, and turn them to rubble. It took a little while to locate the boarding house where Tamar and the others had found lodging. It was two stories high and painted a cheerful blue. Its porch hung with prayer bells, its pointed roof covered in shoe inscriptions that glittered with gold pigment. We found Tamar and Nadia, seated at a low table in one of the public rooms, Adric beside them, his empty coat sleeve neatly pinned, a book perched awkwardly on his knees. They sprang to their feet when they saw us. Tolya enveloped his sister in an enormous hug, while Zoya gave Nadia and Adric a grudging embrace. Tamar hugged me close as Ancot sprang from Harshaw's shoulders to forage through the leavings of their meal.
"What happened?" she asked, taking in my troubled expression.
"Later. Misha came pelting down the stairs and hurled himself at Mal.
"You came back!" he shouted.
"Of course we did," said Mal, sweeping him into a hug. "Did you keep to your duties?"
Misha nodded solemnly.
"Good. I'll expect a full report later."
"Come on," Adric said eagerly. "Did you find it? David's upstairs with Jenya. Should I go get him?"
"Adric," chastised Nadia. "They're exhausted and probably starving."
"Is there tea?"
asked Tolia. Adric nodded and went off to order.
"We have news," said Tamar. "And it isn't good."
I didn't think it could possibly be worse than our news, so I waved her on.
"Tell me."
"The Darkling attacked West Ravka."
I sat down, hard.
"When?"
"Almost immediately after you left."
I nodded. It was some comfort in knowing there was nothing I could have done.
"How bad?"
"He used the fold to take a big chunk out of the south, but from what we've heard, most of the people had already evacuated."
"Any word of Nikolai's forces?"
"There are rumors of cells cropping up fighting under the Lansov banner, but without Nikolai to lead them, I'm not sure how long they'll hold out."
"All right.
At least now I knew what we were dealing with."
"There's more."
I glanced at Tamar questioningly, and the look on her face sent a chill slithering over my skin.
"The Darkling marched on Kerem'sin."
Chapter 15. My stomach lurched.
"What?"
There are rumors that he put it to the torch."
"Alina," Mal said.
"The students," I said, panic creeping in on me. "What happened to the students?"
"We don't know," said Tamar. I pressed my hands to my eyes, trying to think.
"Your key,"
I said, my breath coming in harsh gasps.
"There's no reason to believe."
"The key," I repeated, hearing the quaking edge in my voice. Tamar handed it to me.
"Third on the right," she said softly.
I took the stairs two at a time. Near the top, I slipped and banged my knee hard on one of the steps. I barely felt it. I stumbled down the hall, counting the doors. My hands were shaking so badly it took me 2 tries to fit the key in the lock and get it to turn. The room was painted in reds and blues, just as cheerful as the rest of the place. I saw Tamar's jacket thrown over a chair by the tin basin, the 2 narrow beds pushed together, the rumpled wool blankets. The window was open, and autumn sunlight flooded through. A cool breeze lifted the curtains. I slammed the door behind me and walked to the window. I gripped the sill, vaguely registering the rickety houses at the edge of the settlement, the spindles in the distance, the mountains beyond. I felt the pull of the wound in my shoulder, the creep of darkness inside me. I launched myself across the tether, seeking him, the only thought in my mind. "What have you done?" With my next breath, I was standing before him, the room a blur around me.
"At last,"
the Darkling said. He turned to me, his beautiful face coming into focus. He was leaning against a scorched mantle. Its outline was sickeningly familiar. His gray eyes were empty, haunted. Was it Bagra's death that had left him this way, or some horrific crime he'd committed here?
"Come,"
the Darkling said softly.
"I want you to see."
I was trembling, but I let him take my hand and place it in the crook of his arm. As he did, the blurriness of the vision cleared and the room came to life around me. We were in what had been the sitting room at Kerem'sin. The shabby sofas were stained black with soot. Anakuya's treasured samovar lay on its side, a tarnished hulk. Nothing remained of the walls but a charred and jagged skeleton, the ghosts of doorways. The curving metal staircase that had once led to the music room had buckled from the heat, its steps fusing together. The ceiling was gone. I could see straight through the wreck of the second story. Where the attic should have been, there was only gray sky. Strange, I thought stupidly. The sun is shining in Devastolba.
I've been here for days,
he said, leading me through the wreckage, over the piles of debris, through what had once been the entry hall.
Waiting for you.
The stone steps that led to the front door were smeared with ash, but intact. I saw the long, straight gravel drive, the white pillars of the gate, the road that led to town. It had been nearly 2 years since I'd seen this view, but it was just as I remembered. The darkling placed his hands on my shoulders and turned me slightly. My legs gave way. I fell to my knees, my hands clasped over my mouth. A sound tore from me, too broken to be called a scream. The oak I'd once climbed on a dare still stood, untouched by the fire that had taken Karamsin. Now its branches were full of bodies. The three Grisha instructors hung from the same thick limb, their kefta fluttering slightly in the wind, purple, red, and blue. Beside them, Botkin's face was nearly black above the rope that had dug into his neck. He was covered in wounds. He'd died fighting before they'd strung him up. Next to him, Anna Kuya swayed in her black dress, her heavy key ring at her waist, the toes of her button boots nearly scraping the ground.
She was, I think, the closest thing you had to a mother, murmured the Tarkling.
The sobs that shook me were like the lashes of a whip. I flinched with each one, bent double, collapsing into myself. The Darkling knelt before me. He took me by the wrists, pulling my hands free from my face as if he wanted to watch me weep.
Alina, he said.
I kept my eyes on the steps, my tears clouding my vision. I would not look at him.
Alina, he repeated.
Why?
The word was a wail, a child's cry.
Why would you do this? How could you do this? Don't you feel any of it?
I have lived a long life, rich in grief. My tears are long since spent. If I still felt as you do, if I ached as you do, I could not have borne this eternity.
I hope Botkin killed 20 of your Grisha, I spat at him. 100!
He was an extraordinary man.
Where are the students? I made myself ask, though I wasn't sure I could bear the answer. What have you done?
Where are you, Alina?
I felt sure you would come to me when I moved against West Ravka.
I thought your conscience would demand it. I could only hope that this would draw you out.
Where are they? I screamed.
They are safe. For now.
They will be on my skiff when I enter the fold again.
As hostages,
I said dully. He nodded.
In case you get any thoughts of attack rather than surrender. In 5 days I will return to the Unsea, and you will come to me, you and the Tracker, or I will drive the fold all the way to West Ravka's coast, and I will march those children one by one to the mercy of the Volcra.
This place, these people, they were innocent.
I have waited hundreds of years for this moment, for your power, for this chance. I have earned it with loss and with struggle. I will have it, Alina, whatever the cost.
I wanted to claw at him, to tell him I'd see him torn apart by his own monsters.
I wanted to tell him I would bring all the power of Muratsova's amplifiers down on him, an army of light, born of Merzost, perfect in its vengeance. I might be able to do it, too, if Mal gave up his life. "There will be nothing left," I whispered. "No," he said gently as he folded me in his arms. He pressed a kiss to the top of my hair. "I will strip away all that you know, all that you love, until you have no shelter but me." In grief, in horror, I let myself break apart. I was still on my knees, my hands clutching the windowsill, my forehead pressed against the wooden slats of the boarding house wall. Outside, I could hear the faint jingle of prayer bells. Inside, there was no sound but the hitch of my breath, the rasp of my sobs as the whip continued to fall, as I bent my back and wept. That was where they found me. I didn't hear the door open or their steps as they approached. I just felt gentle hands take hold of me. Zoya sat me down on the edge of the bed, and Tamar settled beside me. Nadia took a comb to my hair, carefully working through the tangles. Jenya washed first my face, then my hands, with a cool cloth she'd wetted in the basin. It smelled faintly of mint. We sat there saying nothing, all of them clustered around me. "He has the students," I said flatly. 23 children. He killed the teachers. And Botkin. And Anakuya, a woman they'd never known. The woman who had raised me. "Mal,
he told us," said Nadia softly.
I think some part of me expected blame, recrimination. Instead, Jenya rested her head on my shoulder. Tamar squeezed my hand. This wasn't just comfort, I realized. They were leaning on me, as I was leaning on them, for strength. I have lived a long life, rich in grief. Had the Darkling had friends like this? People whom he'd loved, who had fought for him and cared for him and made him laugh? People who had become little more than sacrifices to a dream that outlived them. "How long do we have?" Tamar asked. 5 days. A knock came at the door. It was Mal. Tamar made room for him beside me.
"Bad?" he asked.
I nodded. I couldn't yet stand to tell him what I'd seen. "I have 5 days to surrender, or he'll use the fold again."
"He'll do it anyway," said Mal. "You said so yourself. He'll find a reason."
"I might buy us some time."
"At what cost? You were willing to give up your life," he said quietly. "Why won't you let me do the same?"
"Because I can't bear it." His face went hard. He seized my wrist, and again I felt that jolt. Light cascaded behind my eyes as if my whole body were ready to crack open with it. Unspeakable power lay behind that door, and Mal's death would open it.
"You will bear it," he said, "or all of these deaths, all we've given up, will be for nothing."
Jenya cleared her throat. The thing is, you may not have to. David has an idea."
"Actually, it was Jenya's idea," David said.
We were crowded around a table beneath an awning, a little way down the street from our boarding house. There were no real restaurants in this part of the settlement, but a kind of makeshift tavern had been set up in a burned-out lot. There were lanterns strung over the rickety tables, a wooden keg of sweet fermented milk, and meat roasting in 2 metal drums, like the one we'd seen that first day at the market. The air was thick with the smell of juniper smoke. 2 men were shooting dice at a table near the keg, while another plucked his way through a shapeless tune on a battered guitar. There was no discernible melody, but Misha seemed satisfied.
He'd taken up an elaborate dance that apparently required clapping and a great deal of concentration.
"We'll make sure to put Jenya's name on the plaque," said Zoya. "Just get on with it."
"Remember how you disguised the bittern?"
David asked.
"The way you bent the light around the ship instead of letting it bounce off of it?"
"I was thinking," said Jenya, "what if you did that with us?"
I frowned.
You mean... "It's the exact same principle," said David. "It's a greater challenge because there are more variables than just blue sky, but curving light around a soldier is no different than curving light around an object."
"Wait a minute," said Harshaw.
"You mean we'd be invisible?"
"Exactly," said Jenya.
Adric leaned forward.
"The Darkling will launch from the dry docks in Krebirsk. We could sneak into his camp, get the students out that way."
His fist was clenched, his eyes alight. He knew those children better than any of us. Some of them were probably his friends. Tullia frowned.
"There's no way we'd get into camp and free them without being noticed. Some of those kids are younger than Misha." "Krebirsk will be too complicated," said David. "Lots of people, interrupted sight lines. If Alina had more time to practice..."
"We have 5 days," I repeated.
"So we attack on the fold," said Jenya. "Alina's light will keep the Volcra at bay."
I shook my head.
"We'd still have to fight the Darkling's Nichevoya."
"Not if they can't see us," said Jenya.
Nadia grinned.
"We'd be hiding in plain sight."
"You'll have Oprichniki and Grisha too," said Tolia. "They won't be short on ammunition like we will. Even if they can't see their targets, they may just open fire and hope they get lucky."
"So we stay out of range."
Tamar moved her plate to the center of the table.
"This is the glass skiff," she said. "We place marksmen around the perimeter and use them to thin the Darkling's ranks. Then we get close enough to sneak onto the skiff. And once we get the kids to safety..."
"We blow it to bits,"
said Harshaw. He was practically salivating at the prospect of the explosion.
"And the Darkling with it," Jenya finished.
I gave Tamar's plate a turn, considering what the others were suggesting. Without the third amplifier, my power was no match for the Darkling's in a head-on confrontation. He'd proved that in no uncertain terms. But what if I came at him unseen, using light for cover the way others used darkness? It was sneaky, even cowardly, but the Darkling and I had left honor behind long ago. He'd been in my head, waged war on my heart. I wasn't interested in a fair fight, not if there was a chance I could save Mal's life. As if he could read my mind, Mal said,
"I don't like it. Too many things can go wrong."
"This isn't just your choice," said Nadia. "You've been fighting beside us and bleeding with us for months now. We deserve the chance to try and save your life."
"Even if you are a useless Otkazatsia," added Zoya.
"Careful," said Harshaw. "You're talking to the Darklands. Wait, what are you? His cousin? His nephew?"
Mal shuddered.
"I have no idea." "Are you going to start wearing black now?"
Mal gave a very firm
no.
"You're one of us," said Jenya, "whether you like it or not. Besides, if Alina has to kill you, she may go completely crazy, and she'll have the 3 amplifiers. Then it will be up to Misha to stop her with the power of awful dancing."
"She is pretty moody,"
said Harshaw. He tapped his temple.
"Not totally there, if you know what I mean."
They were kidding, but they might also have been right.
"You are meant to be my balance."
What I felt for Mal was messy and stubborn and might leave me heartbroken in the end. But it was also human. Nadia reached out and nudged Mal's hand.
"At least consider the plan. And if it all goes wrong..."
"Alina gets a new bracelet," finished Zoya.
I scowled.
How about I slice you open and see how your bones fit?
Zoya fluffed her hair.
I bet they're just as gorgeous as the rest of me.
I gave Tamar's plate another turn, trying to imagine what this kind of maneuver might require. I wished I had Nikolai's mind for strategy. One thing I was sure of.
It will take more than an explosion to kill the Darkling. He survived the fold and the destruction of the chapel.
Then what?
Asked Harshaw.
It has to be me, I said.
If we can separate him from his shadow soldiers, I can use the cut. The Darkling was powerful, but I doubted even he could bounce back from being torn in half, and though I had no claim to Morozova's name, I was the Sun Summoner. I'd hoped for a grand destiny, but I would settle for a clean kill. Zoya released a brief, giddy laugh.
This actually might work.
It's worth thinking about, I said to Mal. The Darkling will expect an attack, but he won't expect this.
Mal was silent for a long moment.
All right, he said. But if it does go wrong, we all agree what has to happen.
He looked around the table. One by one, they nodded. Tolia's face was stoic. Jenya dropped her gaze. Finally, only I remained.
I want your word, Alina.
I swallowed the lump in my throat. I'll do it. The words tasted like iron on my tongue.
Good, he said.
He grabbed my hand.
Now let's show Misha how bad dancing's done.
Kill you, dance with you. Any other requests?
Not at the moment, he said, pulling me close. But I'm sure I'll think of something.
I tucked my head against Mal's shoulder and breathed in his scent. I knew I shouldn't let myself believe in this possibility. We didn't have an army. We didn't have the resources of a king. We only have this ragged crew.
I will strip away all that you know, all that you love.
If he could, I knew the Darkling would use these people against me, but it had never occurred to him that they might be more than liabilities. Maybe he'd underestimated them, and maybe he'd underestimated me, too. It was stupid. It was dangerous. But Anakuya used to tell me that hope was tricky like water. Somehow it always found a way in. We stayed up late that night, talking through the logistics of the plan. The realities of the fold complicated everything. Where and how we would enter, whether or not it was even possible for me to cloak myself, let alone the others, how to isolate the Darkling and get the students clear. We had no blasting powders, so we'd have to make our own. I also wanted to ensure that the others had some way out of the fold if anything happened to me. We left early the next morning and crossed back through Debastol Ba to retrieve the bittern from the quarry. It was strange to see it sitting where we'd left it, tucked safely away like a pigeon in the eaves.
Saints,
said Adric, as we clambered into the hulls.
Is that my blood?
The stain was nearly as big as he was. We'd all been so tired and beaten after our long escape from the spinning wheel that no one had even thought to deal with it.
You made the mess,
said Zoya.
You clean it up.
Need two hands to swab,
Adric retorted, taking a place at the sails instead. Adric seemed to relish Zoya's taunts over Nadia's constant fussing. I'd been relieved to learn that he could still summon, though it would take some time for him to be able to control strong currents with just one arm.
Bagra could teach him.
The thought came at me before I remembered that was no longer possible. I could almost hear her voice in my head.
Should I cut off your other arm? Then you'd have something to whine about. Do it again, and do it better.
What would she have made of all this? What would she have made of Mal? I pushed the thought away. We'd never know, and there was no time for mourning. Once we were in the air, the squaller set a gentle pace, and I used the time to practice bending the light as I camouflaged the ship from below. The journey took only a few hours, and we landed in a marshy pasture west of Karjeva. The town was the site of the summer horse sales every year. It wasn't known for anything but its racing track and its breeding stables, and even without the war, this late in the year, it would have been all but deserted. The missive to the apparat had proposed that we meet at the race course. Tamar and Harshaw would scout the track on foot to make sure we weren't walking into a trap. If anything felt wrong, they'd circle back to meet us, and we'd decide what to do from there. I didn't think the apparat would turn us over to the Darkling, but there was also the possibility that he'd struck some kind of new bargain with the Shu Han or Fjerda. We were a day early, and the pasture was the perfect place to practice cloaking moving targets. Misha insisted on being first.
"I'm smaller," he said. "That will make it easier."
He ran out into the center of the field. I raised my hands, gave a twist of my wrists, and Misha disappeared. Harshaw gave an appreciative whistle.
"Can you see me?"
Misha shouted. As soon as he started waving, the light around him rippled and his skinny forearms appeared as if suspended in space.
"Focus." They vanished.
"Misha," instructed Mal, "run toward us."
He appeared, then disappeared again as I adjusted the light.
"I can see him from the side,"
Tolia called from across the pasture.
I blew out a breath. I had to think about this more carefully. Disguising the ship had been easier because I'd only been altering the reflection of the light from below. Now I had to think about every angle.
"Better," said Tolia.
Zoya yelped.
"That little brat just kicked me!"
"Smart kid,"
said Mal. I lifted a brow.
"Smarter than some."
He had the good grace to blush. I spent the rest of the afternoon vanishing one, then two, then five Grisha at a time in the field. It was a different kind of work, but Bagra's lessons still applied. If I concentrated too hard on projecting my power, variables overwhelmed me. But if I thought about the light being everywhere, if I didn't try to prod it and just let it bend, it got much easier. I thought of the times I'd seen the Darkling use his power to blind soldiers in a battle, taking on multiple enemies at once. It was easy for him. Natural. "I know things about power that you can barely guess at." I practiced that night, then started up again the next morning after Tamar and Harshaw set out, but my concentration kept faltering. With more marksmen, our attack on the Darkling skiff might actually stand a chance. What would be waiting at the race course? The priest himself? No one at all? I imagined a surf army, protected by three amplifiers, marching beneath the banner of the Firebird. That wasn't the war we were waging anymore.
"I can see him,"
Zoya sing-songed at me, and sure enough, Tolia's big shape was flickering in and out as he jogged to my right. I dropped my hands.
"Let's break for a bit," I suggested.
Nadia and Adric unfurled one of the sails so she could help him learn to manage updraft, and Zoya sprawled lazily on the deck to offer less than helpful critique. Meanwhile, David and Jenya bent their heads over one of his notebooks, trying to figure out where they could extract the components for a batch of Lumia. It turned out Jenya didn't just have a gift for poisons. Her talents had always lain somewhere between Corporalnik and Materialnik, but I wondered what she might have become, what path she might have chosen if not for the Darkling's influence. Mal and Misha headed to the far side of the field with arms full of pine cones and set them along the fence as targets so Misha could learn to shoot. That left me and Tolia with nothing to do but worry and wait. He sat down beside me on one of the holes, legs dangling over.
"Do you want to practice some more?"
he asked.
"I probably should." A long moment passed, and then he said,
"Can you do it when the time comes?"
I was eerily reminded of Mal asking me if I could bring down the Firebird.
"You don't think the plan will work?"
"I don't think it matters."
"You don't?"
"If you defeat the Darkling, the Fold will remain."
I kicked my heels against the hull. "I can deal with the Fold," I said. My power will make crossings possible. We can eliminate the Volcra. I didn't like to think about that. As monstrous as they were, the Volcra had once been human. I leaned back and studied Tolia's face. You're not convinced.
You asked me once why I didn't let you die in the chapel. Why I let Mal go to you. Maybe there was a reason you both lived. Maybe this is it.
It was a supposed saint who started all of this, Tolia.
And a saint will end it.
He slid from the hull to the ground and looked up at me.
I know you don't believe as Tamar and I do, he said. But no matter how this ends, I'm glad our faith brought us to you.
He headed off across the field to join Mal and Misha. Whether it was coincidence or providence that had made Tolia and Tamar my friends, I was grateful for them. And if I was honest with myself, I envied their faith. If I could believe I had been blessed by some divine purpose, it might make the hard choices easier. I didn't know if our plan would work, and if it did, there were still too many unknowns. If we bested the Darkling, what would become of his shadow soldiers? And what about Nikolai? What if killing the Darkling caused his death? Should we be trying to capture the Darkling instead? If we survived, Mal would have to go into hiding. His life would be forfeit if anyone learned what he was. I heard the sound of hoofbeats. Nadia and I climbed up on the captain's platform to get a better look, and as the party came into view, my heart sank.
Maybe there are more back at the race course, said Nadia.
Maybe, I said, but I didn't believe it. I made a quick count. 12 soldiers. As they drew closer, I saw they were all young and most bore the sun tattoo on their faces. Ruby was there, with her pretty green eyes and blonde braid, and I saw Vladim among them, with two other bearded men I thought I recognized from the priest guards. I hopped down from the platform and went to greet them. When the party spotted me, they slipped from their horses, and each dropped to one knee, heads bowed.
Ugh, said Zoya. This again.
I cast her a warning look, though I'd had the exact same thought. I'd nearly forgotten how much I dreaded the burden of sainthood, but I took on the mantle, playing my part. Rise, I said, and when they did, I gestured Vladim forward. Is this all of you? He nodded. And what excuse does the apparat send? He swallowed.
None. The pilgrims say daily prayers for your safety and for the destruction of the fold. He claims that your last command was for him to watch over your flock.
And my plea for aid? Ruby shook her head.
The only reason we knew that you and Nikolai Lensov had requested help was because a monk, loyal to you, retrieved the message from the Church of Sankt Lucan.
So how do you come to be here? Vladim smiled, and those absurd dimples appeared in his cheeks again. He exchanged a glance with Ruby.
We escaped, he said.
I'd known the apparat wasn't to be trusted, and yet some part of me had hoped he might offer me more than prayers. But I'd told him to tend to my followers, to keep them from harm, and they were certainly safer in the White Cathedral than marching into the fold. The apparat would do what he did best. Wait. When the dust cleared, either I would have defeated the Darkling, or found my martyrdom. Either way, men would still take up arms in my name. The apparat's empire of the faithful would rise. I laid my hands on Vladim and Ruby's shoulders. Thank you for your loyalty. I hope you won't be sorry for it. They bowed their heads and murmured,
Sancta Alina.
Let's move, I said. You're a big enough group that you may have attracted attention, and those tattoos can't have helped.
Where are we going?
Asked Ruby, pulling up her scarf to hide her tattoo. Into the fold. I saw the new soldiers shift uneasily.
To fight? She asked.
To travel, Mal replied.
No army, no allies. We had only 3 more days until we were to face the Darkling. We would take our chances, and if we failed, there would be no more options. I would murder the only person I'd ever loved, and who had ever loved me. I'd dive back into battle, wearing his bones.
Chapter 16.
It wouldn't be safe to approach Krybirsk on this side of the fold, so we decided to stage our attack from West Zhravka, and that meant dealing with the logistics of a crossing. Because Nadia and Zoya couldn't keep the Bittern aloft with too many additional passengers, we agreed that Tolia would escort the Soldat Sol to the eastern shore of the fold and wait for us there. It would take them a full day on horseback, and that would give the rest of us time to enter West Zhravka and locate a suitable base camp. Then we'd loop back to lead the others across the fold under the protection of my power. We boarded the Bittern, and mere hours later, we were speeding toward the strange black fog of the Shadow Fold. This time, when we entered the darkness, I was prepared for the sense of familiarity that gripped me, that feeling of likeness. It was even stronger now that I'd dabbled in Merzost, the very power that had created this place. I understood it better, too, the need that had driven the Darkling to try to recreate Moritzova's experiments, a legacy he felt was his. The Volkra came at us, and I glimpsed the dim shapes of their wings, heard their cries as they tore at the circle of light I summoned. If the Darkling had his way, they'd soon be well fed. I was grateful when we burst into the sky above West Zhravka. The territory west of the fold had been evacuated. We flew over abandoned villages and houses, all without seeing a soul. In the end, we decided to set up in an apple farm just southwest of what was left of Novokrybirsk, less than a mile from the dark reach of the fold. It was called Tomikiana, the name written across the side of the cannery, and the barn full of cider presses. Its orchards were thick with fruit that would never be harvested. The owner's house was lavish, a perfect little cake of a building, lovingly maintained and topped with a white cupola. I felt almost guilty as Harshaw broke a window and climbed inside to unlock the doors. "New money," sniffed Zoya as we made our way through the overdecorated rooms, each shelf and mantel brimming with porcelain figurines and curios. Jenya picked up a ceramic pig.
Vile.
I like it here, protested Adric. It's nice. Zoya made a retching sound.
Maybe tastes will come with age.
I'm only 3 years younger than you.
Then maybe you're just doomed to be tacky.
The furniture had been covered with sheets. Misha yanked one free and ran from room to room, trailing it behind him like a cape. Most of the cupboards had been emptied, but Harshaw found a tin of sardines that he opened and shared with Onkat. We'd have to send people out to the neighboring farms to scout for food. Once we'd made sure there were no other squatters, we left David, Jenya, and Misha to get started procuring materials for the production of lumia and blasting powders. Then the rest of us reboarded the Bittern to cross back to Zhravka. We'd planned to reunite with the Soldat Sol at the monument to Sancta Anastasia that stood on a low hill overlooking what had once been Semna. Thanks to Anastasia, Semna had survived the wasting plague that had claimed half the population of the surrounding villages. But Semna hadn't survived the fold. It had been swallowed up when the Black Heretic's disastrous experiments first created the Unsee. The monument was an eerie sight— a giant stone woman rising out of the earth, arms spread wide, her benevolent gaze fixed on the nothingness of the fold. Anastasia was rumored to have rid countless towns of sickness. Had she worked miracles, or was she simply a talented healer? Was there any difference? We'd arrived before the Soldat Sol, so we landed and made camp for the night. The air was still warm enough that we didn't need tents, and we laid our bedrolls next to the foot of the statue, near a patchy field studded with red boulders. Mal took Harshaw with him to try to find game for dinner. It was scarce down here, as if the animals were just as wary of the Unsee as we were.
I wrapped a shawl around my shoulders and walked down the hill to the edge of the black shore. 2 days, I thought, as I looked into the seething black mists. I knew better than to think I understood what lay ahead of me. Every time I'd tried to predict my fate, my life had been upended. I heard a soft scraping sound behind me. I turned and froze. Nikolai was perched atop a high rock. He was cleaner than he had been, but he wore the same ragged trousers.